he never came across to me like he was making an excuse for it. Like, he made that very clear, and therefore I tried to make that very clear. Like, here's what happened, but like, this is an explanation, and that's not the same as an excuse. Like, this is just him explaining, like, this is what transpired that night.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
That voice you just heard was Will Salmon, Brewers beat writer for The Athletic, and he is our guest today on Interrogation Tuesday. Thanks for making us your first listen of the day. This is Locked On Brewers. I'm Dominic Cotroneo. I'll be joined by Vinny Rotino in just a moment. I'm statistician for Bally Sports Wisconsin. Vinny, of course, pre- and post-game analyst on Bally Sports Wisconsin. And today we bring in The Athletic, another member of the press box, into the show today. Will's got a great story that we jump into in the very beginning, a guy from Queens that went to the South to cover sports, football specifically, and now has made his way here to the good land to cover the Brewers, his dream job of covering baseball. We touch on quite a few topics, including his most recent article with Devin Williams when he went to St. Louis and just released that last week. I would highly encourage you guys to check that out as well. Another quick note, again, three shows this week here on Locked On Brewers. So today is the second show. We will have next our Throwback Thursday series coming up on Thursday, in which we will count down games number 12 and 11. We're nearly to the top 10 for our top 20 games of 2021. So that series is going to take us all the way into February. I think you know which games are the top games. But before we get to Will, I got to tell you about, of course you know who I'm going to tell you about. It's Built Bar. New Year's resolutions, of course. You can start them off and get them going strong with the best protein bar in the game. That's right, it's Built Bar. 100% real chocolate cover, and it's only 130 calories. It's got 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams of carbs, and 17 grams of protein. And again, it's got real chocolate on the outside. It doesn't taste waxy or chalky. It actually tastes like a candy bar, and it's something you can actually eat as opposed to a candy bar. And it's healthy for you, and you actually won't feel guilty about eating a Built Bar. It's that good. In fact, my dad just texted me the other day, said, "Hey, I finally got myself some Built Bar. Really like them." See? You can use the promo code LOCKED15 at Built.com, and you're going to get 15% off your order thanks to our friends at Built.com. Look, we all know that you've got a secret stash right now for all your sweets, and I don't even have ice cream in the house right now. I go with Built Bar instead. All right, that's my sweet treat, and I'm all good. It's perfect. It tastes great. You forget you're eating a protein bar. Again, you can go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and you're going to get 15% off of one of the best protein bars in the game, if not the best the protein bar in the game, if you ask me. So go support our friends, Built.com. All right, let's get to the interview.
Joined by Will Salmon. Will, really a pleasure to have you on the show, obviously. Will, I love asking all of our guests kind of their story, their background. I'm very fascinated by your story in particular. You know, I don't think fans really get a glimpse as to who is covering the team. I mean, even when I interviewed Brian Anderson on the show, I mean, he's never really interviewed, and people really don't get a chance to know him or know who's covering the team and broadcasting about the team or writing about the team. What is your story? I mean, you went from high school football, I don't want to give it away, spoiler alert, high school football, college football, to an MLB beat writer. And that was kind of a dream come true for you, from my understanding. Enlighten us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, thanks for asking. And I think first, like, I think your point is right on with the fact that a lot of people don't maybe get to learn about the people covering the team. And a lot of that's honestly because I think the folks who cover the team are very much about doing the job and doing the job really well. And they don't really make it about themselves, you'll find, particularly on this beat, which, as you could probably tell, jives with me just fine, because I'm not that way either. Not that there's anything wrong with like self-promotion or anything like that, but like you just don't really find that on this particular beat a whole lot. So I think that's one of the reasons why. And it's a humble beat that does its job really well, I think, and lets the work kind of speak for itself. But since you asked,
yeah,
it's kind of like a long story. And I guess I should start with saying that, you know, I grew up in Queens and I started working for Newsday in New York, which is a pretty prominent newspaper in that area. And I was covering high school sports predominantly, but also chipped in with like Mets coverage, Yankees coverage. And I was pretty young. I was a couple of years out of college at the time. And basically they were like, hey, you know, we really like you. This is like 2-3 years into working there. We really like you, but we're probably not going to promote you just because we could just hire somebody else, frankly, like, and put them at, put, make them full time and just keep you as part time because they have more experience and, you know, go somewhere else and get more experience and maybe come back one day. And so like, I did that essentially. I never really came back, but I did get the experience and I went somewhere else. You know, I went to all the way from, I went all the way to Auburn, Alabama to wow. cover high school sports, high school football on Friday nights in the South, which was an extreme culture shock for me. I grew up in, like I said, Queens, very diverse, and just a lot of differences that the people listening don't need me to outline in comparing the two places. But yeah, it was definitely different for me, but I liked it. I genuinely liked it. I liked it so much that the next stop for me was Mississippi. And from there, I covered high school and recruiting. I was their high school and recruiting editor for the Clarion Ledger, which is the largest paper in Mississippi. They promoted me to the Mississippi State football beat. And around that time, which was about 2017-ish, was when The Athletic was starting to gain a little bit more prominence. It got off the ground in about 2015, 2016, but not a whole lot of people knew what it was. Me, I'm just a journalism nerd. So like I knew right away that this was something that I was interested in. They were doing journalism the right way. They were doing rich storytelling. It was all things that I tried to do at the newspaper that I was working at. And I remember like specifically, I did like this embedded story with the Mississippi State basketball team where I was with them on like a road trip for like 3 or 4 days. And I was looking at The Athletic and I'm like, this is like what they do all the time. And instead of me like grinding away with like these game stories about another loss to Missouri, like I could just be doing something like this maybe. And so I sent like a bunch of cold emails to The Athletic and never heard back or anything like that. Just silence. And then it wasn't until that Dan Mullen was the coach at Mississippi State football team. He left to go to Florida in 2017 after that season. And then later on in the offseason, The Athletic contacted me and they were like, hey, you know, Dan Mullen's at Florida. We would like to expand their college football staff. What do you think about maybe covering Florida? Or maybe if you don't want to do that, maybe we could find a way to like cover Mississippi State and you could stay at Mississippi State and cover them. And me, you know, I jumped at the chance to go to Florida, of course. I mean, like we want to go to Sunshine State. And, you know, I had a good relationship with that coaching staff and, you know, it just all worked out. Still, all that whole while that I was covering college football, continuing even at The Athletic, I always wanted to cover baseball. You know, growing up from where I'm from, you're either a Mets fan or a Yankees fan, and you go one way or the other, and that's your allegiance. And there's room for the NFL and there's room for the NBA, but nobody really watches college football up there. It's not really a thing that people do. And so that was different. And for me, like I always had that inside me that baseball was what I wanted to do the most. And so I just kept pushing at that. You know, I didn't let like the fact that I had a good college background and I was already like well into a good career covering college football stopped me from doing what I essentially wanted to do in the long run, which was cover baseball. So to finally cut to the chase, The Athletic finally had an opening. They were like, are you sure you want to do this? It's a small market team. You're covering UF. UF's a pretty big deal. And I was like, oh yeah, hell yeah, I want to do this. This is exactly what I've wanted to do my whole life. So yeah, it's definitely a dream can come true. Like you said, Vinny, it's kind of maybe weird for somebody like me as like a native New Yorker to say that about covering the Brewers, but it really is. Like, I don't foresee myself like wanting to move anywhere else. Like, I love covering the team. I love covering the organization. And it just definitely just fits my personality a little bit, I feel like.
That's a great story. And obviously the Brewers, I feel like the culture in the fan base and everybody is very lucky to have you. I mean, if you haven't checked out Will Salmon, any of his pieces, they're all very, very compelling. He talks about great storytelling. He is a great storyteller. So definitely check him out on The Athletic. But yeah, no, I love that story. It's a great story. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah. Sorry. I was probably like long winded with a lot of like different states and a lot of geography going on probably in that tale, but I appreciate the kind words nonetheless, but you know, I like sharing it just because, you know, sometimes people get pigeonholed into certain jobs. And like, you see that even in baseball where like, you know, a minor league coach, for instance, or a minor league manager gets pigeonholed into that specific role. It's like, you know, forget that, like, you know, find an organization or find a a company that values the work that you do and can see it relate to a different area, perhaps, because the skills do translate, I feel like, and I feel strongly about that.
That's fantastic. And speaking of storytelling and going into a deep dive, you did release a piece last week going to St. Louis to talk to Devin Williams. And for most of us on the outside, it was really the first chance that a lot of us got to hear from Devin since breaking his hand right before the playoffs. And obviously he wasn't with the team during the playoffs, but can you break it down? What was that experience like getting in touch with Devin and getting yourself down to St. Louis for that interview?
It was great. I mean, he was I wasn't in his head as he was reading the message of like, hey, do you want to do this or not? But I never received a no or anything like that. I never received any pushback. It was like, yes. I think he preferred to do it in person from what I gathered. I don't think, you know, and I did too, just because of the nature of the story. I just rather be there for it and just see him face to face and ask the questions that, you know, frankly, are just sometimes they're hard questions to answer. And like, honestly, I'm not sure if he really necessarily wanted to answer those questions, but he did. And there wasn't one question that he didn't want to, that he didn't address or he didn't talk about or anything like that. So like, I just came away from that thinking in my head that, you know, maybe like it's a good story in the sense that people can learn from it, because I feel like everybody has that thing that they regret, or maybe for some people it's big, maybe for some people it's a small little thing that happened over the course of a single day or whatever it is. But like, I think a lot of people struggle with just like removing themselves from that, and it kind of sticks with them and they just never forgive themselves for it. And it stinks, you know, and you see people beat themselves up over it. And so like when he was talking about being able to forgive himself, like that's really what caught my attention about the story, because and I told him this too. It made me want to share that even more, because I feel like it's something that it becomes a little bit more relatable in a sense. It's not just like some pitcher made a mistake one night and punched a wall and broke his hand. You know, it's like there's a little bit more to it. There's some layers to this. There's more to that that this guy has to deal with. And yes, he brought it on himself, and it comes with the territory when you do something silly like that. That's what happens. But no, it was a good experience speaking with him. I was grateful that he was willing to talk about it. I think that I tried to do the best job I can with portraying everything he was saying in a very fair way and present just how he was feeling about it. And I think there's a lot of good news to take from it. One being, like I said earlier, about him forgiving himself, but also the fact that he's, by all accounts, healthy and he's ready to go in spring training.
Was there anything during the writing process and maybe even during the edit, the final edits, where you're thinking, man, I hope the Brewers and the fans understand what Devin's trying to bring out? And do you think that message was received by the fan base here in Milwaukee?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think sometimes like when you're trying to relay somebody else's emotions, something can get lost in the translation, and it's really sensitive, and you have to walk a fine line of how much is over explaining, how much is like making sure that like you're being objective and neutral in this, but also sharing his point of view so that there's some context that's necessary with what he's saying. Because without that, sometimes things could look a little bit weird or look a little bit off. There was probably like, I think you have to be careful as a writer when you do these type of stories and like somebody is explaining what they were doing, because like he never came across to me like he was making an excuse for it. Like he made that very clear, and therefore I tried to make that very clear. Like, here's what happened, but like this is an explanation, and that's not the same as an excuse. Like, this is just him explaining, like, this is what transpired that night. It's not no excusing it or anything like that. And you know, I felt good about the way I was able to relay that. But yeah, I think that the response, like you mentioned, was mostly positive. I think that people are still going to be upset for like what happened, and that comes with being a fan. And there's different segments of the fan base that are going to react negative or positive or whatever, and that's just their personality, and by all, you know, more power to them. But I think the overall response was a positive one of like, okay, like let's move on together here, and like let's the less we have to talk about this and bring this up again, the better. And great that you're healthy, like let's win, sort of thing.
Oh, that was interesting too, because what you just kind of said, that you have to be neutral and objective, but also portray and give context as to what the player is thinking and feeling in the moment. That's got to be very difficult, especially in a situation like that. And you have to try and get the most out of the player. Now, I know that you said he was kind of compliant, I guess it would be a good word, in terms of answering your questions and being very open and forthright about what how it was his fault and all that, and he took total ownership. But at times as a writer, it's got to be difficult to get anything out of a player, right? If they're not willing to kind of be forthright or be open about what they're thinking and feeling, that's got to be the most difficult part of your job, right? To walk that fine line between, you know, I guess being artistic, or you know, what am I trying to say? Just trying to be not too judgmental and not too harsh with a player, but then also you want to be a little bit tough on them at times, right? I mean, that's got to be very, very difficult thing about your job. So Devin Williams obviously wasn't that, but I'm just kind of making that point about I mean, about that's got to be, but you learn that over the years, I'm sure, as a writer, correct?
Yeah, I think that, like, you know, certain guys who are going to, like, you know, certain topics with certain players. And I mean, like, honestly, like, you could see it, like, during the press conferences, even, like, in the post game video, you know, like, when they're on TV, like, you see, like, when their eyebrows raise or whatever, like, at a certain word or a certain phrase or a certain topic. And
right.
it's a no fly zone for certain guys, like, whatever right. that is, you know. And it's like, we all have them with ourselves too, right? With our own personal deals. And so I try to respect that, honestly. And I try to be like, okay, like, if that's something that, like, X player doesn't want to talk about, and it's pretty obvious that he does not want to talk about that, for the most part, I try not to talk about that with him, or I try to, like, just be honest with him and say, look, I know this isn't your favorite topic, but I got to write about this because this is what everybody's saying. This is what everybody's talking about. Or this is your opportunity to explain, like, why this has gone this way. And this is what I'm looking for, and this is what I'm doing. And I think if you're upfront that way, people tend to respect that. And although, like, it's not their favorite topic sometimes, if you give them, like, your word and say, like, hey, like, look, you know, this is my job, and, you know, the fans are asking about this. This is a huge topic. I know you just, this isn't something that, you know, you like to engage with, but it's in your best interest here to at least try to explain it a little bit so that we're better informed here and we can understand. And you're right, Vinny, with, like, then you get to the point when you're in the writing process where it's like, okay, now you want to really be clear that you're being objective here and not making excuses for whatever it is. I always try to do that. But you always kind of catch yourself, not that, like, you're being subjective or, like, you're a fan or anything like that, but I think it's just, you know, you hear the same thing over and over. It almost becomes like osmosis, where it, like, gets into you and it kind of spills out, and it's hard to kind of, like, catch yourself and be like, okay, like, I've adopted this person's perspective, let me, like, step back, maybe ask somebody else to maybe enlighten me further. And, like, I, you know, kind of get into the weeds there with it, but yeah, it's a process like anything else.
Hey, y'all, Dom here jumping in real quick to tell you about our friends at BetOnline. Of course, last night was the national championship game. Shout out to the Dogs. Shout out to UGA. A big win for them, and you could have bet on it with our friends at BetOnline, the number one spot for all of the best sports wagering action here in 2022. It's not too late. You still got NFL playoffs coming up. NBA is in full swing. You got college basketball. They've got the most options of anybody online. You've got their brand new updated desktop and mobile site, and you're going to get a promo when you sign up. You get 50% welcome bonus when you use the promo code LOCKEDON to get started. So you deposit $100 for your first deposit, you're going to get $50 for free just by signing up with the promo code LOCKEDON. You've got football playoffs starting up, of course. We mentioned it. We've got basketball. They've even got hockey, boxing, UFC. Everything's available on BetOnline, straight from your mobile device as well. The fastest and easiest way to wager on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. Let's get back to Will.
Yeah, I wanted to shift gears now to more looking ahead to 2022, as the main question, of course, is when the heck are we going to play? Aside from that, what do you think is the biggest question moving forward for the Brewers coming up ahead of this season in 2022?
You know, for a division winner, they have a few, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's kind of like weird because it's, I like this team a lot. I do. And I liked them last year, before, even before they made the trade for Adames and before he took off, you know, I thought that they were the best team in the division. Because I kind of assumed that they would get production from other people. Instead, they got it from Adames and some other newcomers that nobody obviously saw coming. But point is, the overall structure of the team I like, and I still like, but it starts obviously with Christian Yelich. I hate to kind of beat that down, but he's the guy on the team. He's the face of the team, and you want more production out of him than what they received last year, which was, statistically, they pretty much got an average contributor offensively, and they're expecting more out of that from him. So I think what you're able to get from him is the biggest question mark, mainly because it's such an interesting, I guess, story as to why he has struggled or why the numbers look different. Because after the season, David Stearns, when he was asked about him, said, like, after a while, it wasn't physical. It wasn't a physical limitation, say, like in August and September. Like, once he came back, he was physically fine, is what we were told. So it's a little bit harder, like, when you compare, and I hate to compare him like everybody else does to Bellinger, but Bellinger's story is a little bit more linear or straightforward, where it's like, okay, you can kind of point to the injuries a little bit more, based on when he came back, his at-bats, and the production before and after sort of thing. With Yelich, he had the injuries, but there was also some points in the season where he was said to be healthy. So you just don't know. Besides that, they're going to have to get some more production out of that lineup, regardless of Yelich. There's a question, I guess, hovering around, like, how much do you believe in Willy Adames' production? I'm in the group that does believe in him. If you look at his splits home and away, I think that tells a pretty easy story to understand. Pointing to his days with the Rays, of course, there. So I think you can kind of go up and down the lineup, though, honestly, with those type of questions, getting into even like the minutiae that you guys, I think, covered a few days ago with Rowdy Tellez at first base, third base being a question, just up and down the list. One thing, obviously, that you don't have to question too much is the pitching staff, which should be one of, if not the best of baseball yet again. So they have that working for them.
So obviously the offense is continuing to be the story as the question mark, whether or not this team is really going to take off. But at the end of the day, and I'm going to push back on that a little bit, the offense kind of was, sputtering for most of the season until Willy Adames came. And then they just kind of got some contributions really from everybody except Christian Yelich. And so, and then they had, and they were 30 games over 500. So at that, so it's a, are we picking at this team a little bit? Are we just kind of like, cause I'm with you. I'm with you. I think that the offense is the question mark, but is it good enough that because the pitching is that elite that all the offense has to be is good enough? And I'm just kind of asking you that question.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that premise. But the thing for me is that I think that as constructed, the team is probably good to win like 90, 95 games again, maybe. I think that's probably, I don't think that's far-fetched. I think that like 90 wins is definitely reasonable for this team. I think the question then becomes though, like, how intimidating is this team in the division round again? And, once they get into the playoffs, how does this team look? Because I think that the expectations at this point for the Brewers should be higher than just making it to the playoffs. I think that they were higher than that, of course, last season, based on the pitching staff that they had and just the continued success that they've had the last few years. It kind of makes it like you want more for this group and you see more in the potential for more. You see it, it's there. And I don't know, like, I'm also with you in the sense that, like, does one more guy make a difference for you? I guess it depends who that is, right? Like, if sure. you all of a sudden maybe insert Chris Bryant on this team or something like that, then yeah, maybe. Sure. But even then, it's like, I just don't know. I think that the team is like, it's a pitching focused team and they're going to win or lose on the backs of their pitchers. And they're going to go as far as they take them. And I don't know if there's really anything wrong with that. I think that's a really good way to construct your team when you have know, five or at this point, maybe even six when you count Ashby, guys that you can go to for a rotation who on any given day, going back to last year, were able to give you a quality start at the very least, and more often than not. So, you know, there's far worse ways to construct a team than the way the Brewers are look right now. That's definitely clear.
Yeah. To wrap up the offensive note, I mean, this is a team that only scored six runs in four playoff games last year, and four of them came in game four. So there's definitely a fair critique with the offense moving into 2022, given you lose your biggest power bat, and obviously Eyl Garcia, you have to prove to Adames that he's going to do it again, prove to Urias that he's going to do it again. So I totally agree with that. My view is that the pressure is really actually on the pitching staff, in my opinion, because there is so much of a, oh, they'll do it again. It's such a fickle thing. And I just want to kind of turn that into a question around Corbin Burnes. I mean, with the Cy Young, you wrote some great pieces during the middle of the summer about why he should be the Cy Young, kind of helped really give him some pub of, you know, to the writers that weren't really paying attention, that only see the lower number of innings or, you know, don't understand his win-loss record, things like that, that he was the most dominant pitcher in the National League and arguably Major League Baseball this year. What was it like for you to, you know, do these deep dives on Corbin Burnes and get to watch him on any given night?
Yeah, so Corbin Burnes was one of the first people that I met when I took the job, and I walked into spring training back when clubhouses were open in 2020 for like that few weeks in February before things closed down. And I was just struck by, like, this was a dude who had like whatever his ERA was the year before, 8, 9, something ugly. And the dude just stood there and took every single question from like a group of reporters, like every day for like the first 3 days of spring training, it seemed. And he would just answer them and like totally was totally cool about it. And like, that's fine. And like a lot of guys were like that, but it was just the way that he was answering it. And I was like, okay, this guy has like a really good plan in place. And he was talking about just like strides that he made mentally, and not just that, but also he was combining that, which is a totally new approach. And he was just saying like all these things that, you know, I don't know if like people really grasped exactly like all the changes that he was talking about in those moments, because it was like, okay, you're saying like you're going through like this mental skill experience, and now you're fiddling with a cutter or a slider or whatever, you know, whatever it was. It turned out to be all the above, of course. And so for me, it was like, okay, this guy's like really interesting. And so I just kept monitoring him and just kept checking in with him. And I think to like your larger question of like the pressure being on them, I would agree. But I also bring up what I brought up about Corbin Burnes to say that the dude is like really different. Like he's like really an outlier when it comes to like competitiveness and just going about his day and making sure like he's doing every little thing that he could possibly do to succeed when it's his turn to pitch. And I mean, every little detail, it's pretty like maniacal approach here with like just the nitty gritty that he goes through on a day to day, just to make sure that everything is checked off. It's like obsessive. At least I got the impression of that. And then I feel like for better or worse, when you're at that high level and you're performing at that high level, that's kind of like what you need. And I think that unlocks a lot of things for you when you get to that state. Certainly did for him. And so I think that he's equipped to handle that pressure and to thrive, frankly. I think that he feeds off of that. I guess that's what I'm getting at there. So yeah, I like their staff. I think a lot of guys, no, I shouldn't say a lot of guys, because I just said he's an outlier, but like there are guys like that in different ways that just go about their business and handle their business, whether it's Woodruff, who, you know, made the 30 starts and he's as durable as it gets, I feel like. And you could kind of peg him for the numbers that he's projected for. He'll probably hit all of them. And then there's somebody like Freddie Peralta, who's been feeding off of the idea that he's trying to get better every year, and he has. And so I think you have like the right personalities there to kind of handle that. And, you know, I can't really predict like injuries or anything crazy like that. But when you kind of look ahead to the next couple of years with this team, like there's so much to really feel good about because of those three guys. Plus, you know, Adrian Houser, Eric Lauer, and Aaron Ashby.
That's fantastic. And looking ahead to 2022, I'm not going to hold you to it, put your feet to the coals, but do you have a prediction for 2022, given we are only in January? Do you have a thought of where this team's going to be in October?
Well, Don, what do you want? Do you want like numbers on like guys? Do you
are we talking to Vegas and making them set the over or under right now? Or what would you say would be a successful season for the Brewers in 2022? What result would that look like?
They got to get to at least the LCS, I feel like. And then because from there, I do think it tends to be kind of like a crapshoot. You can't say World Series are bust, but I do think they're at the point where it's just not satisfying for anybody, whether it's the fans, the players, the front office, the coaching staff, to again get to the division round and fall short. It's just not going to be satisfying, no matter how their season goes, the ups and downs of it. I just can't really envision a path where they feel satisfied just getting there. So I think they have to get advanced to the LCS to really call this season a success because of the core and nucleus, the young talent that they have, and the way this team is built.
That's awesome. Well, Will, we really do appreciate you taking some time here for our Interrogation Tuesday on Locked On Brewers. For folks who aren't aware, is there any sort of promo code that they can find with The Athletic, or just go straight to sign up with The Athletic to read all of your work?
Yeah, I mean, you could just go there at theathletic.com. I think right now we're probably running something for like $350 or $395 for signups. Usually they're about $7 or something like that. So it's basically half off for a little while. I think like this upcoming week, I should have something on David Dahl coming up soon. He's a guy in big league camp, expected to be in big league camp. Did really well in AAA with the Brewers. And then just some other pitching notes, things of that sort, trying to get through this lockout one story at a time.
Of course. Well, we hope to catch up with you again in spring training and throughout the season once we actually have a season to talk about, of course. But Will Salmon joining us on Locked On Brewers. Thanks for coming on, my friend.
Anytime. You guys are doing an awesome job with the podcast. Love it.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.